Welcome to our podcast, Star Trek Age of Discovery. I'm Adele Austin Anderson.
And I'm Gary Anderson.
And we're a married couple who are longtime fans of Star Trek.
We took a little time off after our reviews of the Picard series. However, now we plan to produce a weekly podcast for at least the next 23 weeks.
So today we're going to break down the premiere episode of the animated Star Trek parody series, Lower Decks. This is the much-awaited series by writer-producer Mike McMahon, a longtime Star Trek fan. Of course, he's best known for his work on the adult animated sci-fi series, Rick and Morty.
For this episode, we'll summarize the plot and site title significance, and then we'll discuss our initial impressions of the show.
Yeah, so also remember that our analysis does contain spoilers. So if you haven't watched the episode yet, please watch the show first before listening to our comments. Now, we know this may pose a problem for our international listeners outside of North America. Hopefully, the international rights will be resolved soon so everyone will be able to see it. So, Gary, why don't you start us off with the synopsis?
Okay, so Second Contact, the premiere episode of the series, does exactly what you expect a pilot episode to do. It introduces you, the audience, to the characters and the overall tone of the show.
The series centers around four young officers aboard the USS Cerritos in the year 2380. So this would place the events of this show following those in the film Star Trek Nemesis.
The episode begins, as does so many of Star Trek episodes, with a voiceover from one of the characters. As we zoom in on a shot of Douglas Station in orbit, we are introduced to a captain's log. He's detailing their upcoming second contact mission with the Galadorian High Council. But it turns out the voice we're listening to is that of Brad Boimler, an ensign who happens to be in a closet. He's a straight arrow, but he's discovered by Ensign Beckett Mariner, a nonconformist who ridicules Boimler's efforts as well as his aspirations to become a senior officer.
An Orion junior science officer, Ensign Devana Tendi, boards the Cerritos and is given a tour of the ship by Boimler and Mariner. Along the way, the trio comes across Ensign Sam Rutherford, a human with a Vulcan cybernetic implant, which randomly suppresses his emotions from time to time.
The away team to the capital planet of the Galar system unknowingly returns to the ship with a condition that turns them into zombie-like creatures. Unaware of the resulting mayhem on the ship, Boimler and Mariner are on the planet. By orders of Captain Freeman, Boimler is charged to keep an eye on Mariner for any suspicious activity. Boimler catches her taking a dune buggy to deliver farming supplies to local farmers. After he accuses her of wrongdoing, they are attacked by a gigantic spider-like creature. We later learn the spider won't hurt them, but it does cover Boimler with a pink slime. Upon returning to the ship, Chief Medical Officer Tahana discovers the slime is to be an antidote that can be used to cure the infected crew members.
Following the crisis, Boimler chooses not to betray Mariner to the captain, who, it is revealed, to be Mariner's mother and the wife of a Starfleet admiral. Mariner thanks Boimler for his loyalty and pledges to help him reach his objective of becoming a captain.
Yeah, she even says to him that you'll be my Chadich, which right. We all know is a bond that occurs in Klingon culture, which we saw in the Sins of the Father episodes on the Next Generation.
Yep.
So let's talk a little bit about the title significance.
Okay, sounds good.
The series title, Lower Decks, is inspired by episode 15 of season 7 from Star Trek Next Generation, which is the favorite series of creator Mike McMahon. The TNG story focuses on four young officers who aspire to move up the ranks in Starfleet. But unlike the animated series, the TNG episode has a serious tone and ends with a tragic demise of one of the four officers.
The episode's title, Second Contact, refers to the principal directive of the Cerritos crew to serve as the secondary contact to connect with new species or beings who are deemed ready for engagement by the Federation. The Cerritos crew were to follow up with newly discovered societies after more prominent Federation ships reaped the prestige of serving as the first contact.
Yeah, so basically what you're saying is they're the cleanup crew.
They're the cleanup, right, exactly.
They do all of the hard work after all the photographs have been taken with the first contact ship. Yeah. So let's move in and talk a little bit about some analysis.
Okay.
All right, and primarily what we're going to do here is focus on characters.
Yeah, the main characters.
So we know what we're doing. And because this show, unlike other shows, because of its title, it's focused on the lower level crew members as opposed to the captain, the first officer,
the bridge officers,
and the medical officer and whatnot.
Right.
Okay. First, let's talk about Ensign Brad Boimler. Boimler appears to be the only character of the series that is somehow based on one of the characters from the TNG episode, namely Sam Lavelle. Like Sam, Ensign Boimler is focused on moving his career forward in Starfleet. He is a by-the-book officer who initially believes that his staunch work ethic will pay off one day with an appointment to a higher rank. However, when his contributions to finding a cure for the zombie virus are ignored, he realizes it will take much more than just a good service record to reach his goal. A little bit of trivia here for a moment. This character is voiced by the actor Jack Quaid, who is the son of actors Dennis Quaid and Meg Ryan.
Oh, okay. So the other, you know, really prominent character in the series thus far is Ensign Beckett Mariner. She's the daughter of Captain Freeman and a Starfleet admiral. Ensign Mariner initially seems to be a goof-off. She's seen with her sleeves rolled up to the elbow and her top button unbuttoned to reveal a white t-shirt underneath her uniform. And, you know, again, when we see her initially, she is visibly drunk as she shows off some of the contraband she's brought on board. We later find out that she's been relieved of duty on several of the more prominent starships. She also expresses no ambition to strive for a higher rank. She claims she prefers life as a lower decks crew member. Yet, as brought to life by actress Tawny Newsome, Mariner is no slouch, and she does have an ethical core. On the planet, she breaks Starfleet protocol to deliver farming equipment to the farmers because she says it would have taken much longer for the farmers to get those implements if she had followed Starfleet regulations. She proves herself to be quite smart and resourceful enough to keep Boimler and herself safe. Although she and Boimler are often at odds with each other, she promises to help him achieve his career goals.
I think her statement that she doesn't want higher rank is kind of sour grapes.
Yes.
I think there's obviously a conflict between her and her parents, specifically her mother.
That's right.
And I think that since she's been kicked off a lot of more prestigious ships, chances are she feels that she doesn't have a shot. And so she's acting as if that shot doesn't matter to her anymore.
Right.
But as you said, she showed herself to be extremely resourceful and engaged and so quite capable.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely. And she's loyal.
Yes.
Too. Yeah. You know, it's not really about herself. She's very supportive.
And I will say this, the thing that it did warm my heart to see her sleeves rolled up, because it reminded me of O'Brien from Deep Space Nine.
Right. Yeah, because her sleeves, even though I first mentioned that her sleeves were rolled up, you know, when she was inebriated,
right,
they're actually rolled up the entire show.
For the entire episode.
You know, now when she is, you know, on duty,
right,
her top button is not unbuttoned. It is, no. You know.
She's not that insubordinate.
No, but her sleeves are rolled up
right,
all the time.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Okay, let's move on to the other two main characters. That's Ensigns Devon Attendee and Sam Rutherford. Ensigns Tindy and Rutherford were given relatively less airtime than Boimler and Mariner in this episode. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure we're going to get more time with both of them later on.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, we learned that Tindy, who is voiced by Noelle Wells, is an enthusiastic young science officer eager to begin her first assignment aboard the Cerritos. And despite the frenzy created by the zombie virus, she served admirably and keeps a level head while tending to some of her more erratic patients, specifically the nurse that she was sent down to actually assist. She's told by Tana that she has to secure her on one of those sick bays.
Yeah.
Because she's wreathing and trying to bite people. So
Right.
Rutherford is voiced by Eugene Cordero, who appeared in the fewest scenes of any of the four main characters. However, similar to Geordi LaForge of TNG and Montgomery Scott of the original series, Rutherford would geek out over technical issues, which proves to take precedent even over his more romantic concerns.
Right.
I mean, here he is, he's on a date, there's a zombie attack breaks out. He and his date are quite resourceful, and she makes the move on him, and the next thing he's thinking about is why the turbo lift doors didn't open.
Right, exactly. So now let's look at our overall impressions of episode one. So this is the first animated series since Star Trek, the animated series, which premiered in 1973, for a 2-year run. And I do want to mention that even though it was just 2 years, it was actually very highly acclaimed.
Yeah, it won a Peabody
I think it was nominated for an Emmy.
When it came out, it was, I remember it because I saw it in first run. I think we were all impressed by it. I mean,
right.
You may not respond to it that way today because technology has advanced so much, but it was really an innovative show at that time.
And well written,
because it was written by, in many cases, the same writers who had worked for the original series.
That's right. So like most of the Star Trek series, it is episodic as compared to the recent serialized approach of the series, like Discovery and Picard. Unlike all the other series, Lower Decks is supposed to be a comedy with a satiric flair. So personally, I think we both found the Lower Decks episode to be humorous.
Mm-hmm.
But with a few exceptions, not a laugh out loud funny.
I laughed a couple of times out loud, but you're right, you didn't. At all.
Yeah, the first time I watched it, I did not laugh out loud, but actually, upon watching it repeated times, I actually did laugh.
Yeah.
I found there were times that I laughed out
and
loud.
And from what I've heard, I've followed some of the people who reviewed the show who've seen the second episode already.
Uh-huh.
And one of them says that they like the first episode, but the second episode is so much better. So I'm looking forward to that. Okay. As promised by McMahon, the show does deliver on its fan service promise of making numerous references to other Star Trek series. And we won't take time to review them all because there's quite a bit. I mean, you actually have to pause the cartoon
right,
to look all over for all the Easter eggs that are there. Yeah. There are a number of them planted throughout the entire 23-minute episode. We won't take that much time, but since there's no shortage of articles or videos on the internet which can provide a comprehensive list. And in fact, one of our favorites is Dan Gunther, who has Kurt Retz Productions out of Canada. He has a whole Second Contact Easter egg video up on YouTube that I think would be great. I'll put a link in the show notes for this so you can go look at it yourself.
Okay. So do we think the show is worth watching? Well, we'd say so for both fans and those new to the Star Trek universe. Now, the series is definitely targeted for mature audiences, so, you know, well, just because...
language and violence, I think, is... Yeah.
Well, and there's some sexual references, too.
Yeah, yeah.
However, we do appreciate the fact that several of the main characters are voiced by people of color, including Ensign Mariner, who is voiced by an African-American woman, and also Don Lewis, who is an African-American woman...
Who's playing Captain Freeman. And... Eugene
Cordero,
who's Filipino.
Right, and Phil Lamar,
who played the unnamed Starfleet Admiral, who happens to be Mariner's dad. Anybody who's watched cartoons knows Phil Lamar from everything.
Right. He's the...
he's done a lot of...
He's a well-known voice.
He's a well-known voice actor, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Of course, it's still too early to assess the show in comparison to other Star Trek series. However, as the remainder of the 10-episode series unfolds, we hope that the writers will give more time to the character development to allow us to possibly create an affection for these characters in the way that we've already done so for series such as Benjamin Sisko for DS9, Spock from the original series, and Michael Burnham in Discovery. And I think they will. I think I was impressed that if you were to look across the board of all the Star Trek series, mm-hmm. I know this may find you, some people might find this hard to say, but I think this was the strongest premiere of any Star Trek series, because I thought the writing was stronger. Because we know Star Trek pilots have not always been very good.
I don't think I'm ready to say that.
Well, that's my reaction.
Okay.
You can disagree.
I will.
I'm sure you will.
Okay. Or I have.
Yes, you did. Like that. Yeah, you've done that.
Okay. So let's move on to other Star Trek news.
We got a little bit of that.
Yeah. So first of all, the Ready Room is back. It's not really back on a weekly basis, but they had, the first episode, after the hiatus this past week, and the next one is not going to be for another 6 weeks.
Right. You know? Well, what Will Wheaton said was that the next episode of The Ready Room would return following episode six.
Yeah. So host Will Wheaton, for this last episode, that he just did, he interviewed Lower Decks creator and showrunner Mike McMahon and Titmouse Animation Studios' Barry Kelly for an in-depth conversation about the attention to detail that it took in creating the show. They discussed the approach to the look and feel of the Cerritos and all of the costumes and props. In fact, every scene is filled with a ton of Easter eggs for any Star Trek fan. In the interview, McMahon discussed how they leaned on the technical advice of Michael and Denise Okuda, Star Trek's well-known graphic designer and technical advisor team.
Yeah, in fact, if you'll notice, the saucer section of the Cerritos has a yellow band that goes around. Mm-hmm. That they said that what they're doing with that is they're actually replicating the colors that you see in the uniforms of the Starfleet officers. So that means that since there's a yellow band that goes around Cerritos, that means it's a science, a tactical a ship.
Mm.
So on to Star Trek Discovery, and here we do have some news. the premiere date for season 3 is da-da-da-da, October 15th, 2020.
Wow.
It was finally unveiled after the Comic-Con at Home panels. In fact, the very next day after. They released a video of Commander Burnham, Sonequa Martin-Green, planting a tattered Federation flag on a desolate planet, which seems to be picking up right where season 2 left off. If you remember from the season finale, Burnham traveled into the wormhole. Season 3 of Star Trek Discovery finds the USS Discovery crew landing into an unknown future far from the home they once knew. Now living in a time filled with uncertainty, the USS Discovery crew must help to find new friends and also work together to restore hope in the Federation. Mm. That storyline is oddly mirroring the reality that some of us are living with right now.
Right, exactly.
Cinema Blend, the online entertainment art news magazine, had a great article in which they talked about the 6 things they were excited about seeing in season 3. And I think it's a pretty good list. So I'll put a link to that article in the show notes so listeners can read it for themselves.
Right.
And the final bit of Discovery news is that Sonequa Martin-Green and her husband Kendrick are the proud new parents of a daughter named Soraya Shante Green.
Mm.
Born Saturday, July 19th, Martin Green shared the wonderful birth on an Instagram post Tuesday. And this is the couple's second child. Their first is 5-year-old son, Kendrick II.
Okay. So we're really happy for
them. Oh, we're ecstatic for them. They seem to be extremely happy.
So now let's move on to talk about another Star Trek show that's coming real soon. And that is Star Trek Prodigy. So this was one bit of news that was actually part of the Star Trek Universe panels. And the official announcement said that, yes, the show actually will be called Star Trek Prodigy.
Right.
It will premiere on Nickelodeon in 2021. We're also told that the premise of the show is that it follows a group of lawless teens who discover a derelict Starfleet ship and use it to search for adventure, meaning, and salvation.
Which is, I guess, an interesting way of looking at it. I mean, actually, I'm glad they're doing this show because Star Trek has never really, although, you know, young people watch it, I watch it as a kid. They've never done what I think Star Wars has effectively done with programming specific content for young audiences.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, their animated shows have been very helpful in growing the audience of Star Wars fans. And Star Trek, which I think is just as equally deserving, needs to also do the same thing. And so I think this show, hopefully, will be a good entry for young people into the Star Trek universe.
So that they say when, where this takes place or...
Nope. No other details have been given. And we don't even know if they have a writer's room set up yet for this show. The good thing is, however, which is another bit of news...
Yes. Is that it was announced that Ben Hibbon has been tapped to direct, co-executive produce, and service Prodigy's creative lead. In a Deadline Hollywood article, Ramsey Nadeau, executive vice president of animation production and development of the Nickelodeon group, he was quoted as saying, "Ben's contributions to the world of animation are immeasurable, and we are lucky to have his vision and creative genius on Star Trek Prodigy. As an incredible storyteller and a world builder with a distinct vision, his original approach, paired with this beloved property, will bring the characters to life in a whole new way."
So, the translation... He has no background in Star Trek.
Right.
But that he's going to bring the skills that he has acquired in other media to this. And I think that's fine. I mean, we need new, fresh Blood.
Yep, I agree.
And the other thing about this, which I think is sounds promising, is that because it's on Nickelodeon, which if you have cable, you'll be, have access to it. So it's not something that's going to be behind a paywall, per right. se. I mean, you pay for cable, but you grow up in houses. Most houses have cable, so.
And of course, their objective is to bring younger viewers the Star Trek universe. So in closing, we'll be back next week with another review for Lower Decks. This one concerning the next episode entitled Envoys. But until that time,
like, subscribe, and follow Star Trek Age of Discovery on Twitter, Facebook, and at our website at Star Trek AOD. You can also email the show at StarTrekAOD@gmail.com. But until then,
live long and prosper.